Hey, stop what you're doing. I know you're watching this episode. I want you to go to 7figurevirtualeventebook.com. I'm gonna say it again, 7figurevirtualeventebook.com. I had the privilege this year to help multiple people do 6 and 7 figure days leveraging virtual events. And I put together a 7-step process that's gonna walk you through it step by step by step. And once you're done with that book, if you're like, Neo, I wanna learn this a lot more in a deeper sense, I want you to go to mastermindwithneo.com. This is one pillar of my mastermind, right? We got 5 different pillars that we teach. This is just one pillar, how to dominate virtual events, right? So if you're interested, go to mastermindwithneo.com and book a call with my team to see if you are a good fit to join our mastermind. Let's go.
You got to make a decision. Do you want to keep the business in your family for generations, or do you want to sell it? You move forward and always operate as if you're going to sell the business. The best love that I can like give back to it is transitioning and finding somebody else that can play that role and do the things that I cannot do. For entrepreneurs, you got to be very careful about how much equity you give away in the very beginning.
100%.
And that's the mistake that I see a lot of entrepreneurs that we interface with make.
It has to work where it has to work.
We got a super special guest. I'm about to bring to you entrepreneur, serial entrepreneur, philanthropist, CEO of Black Ambition Prize. I'm talking about founder of tech companies. I'm talking about all around amazing boss, Felicia Hatcher. What's up, sis?
Hey, Neo. How's it going, man?
I'm amazing. Thank you for coming on. How you been?
I've been great.
Good.
Fantastic.
Man, it's so cool to do this interview. Vernon Moxie.
Yeah.
I've been rocking with him probably 10 years, maybe. And all he used to say, do you know Felicia Hatcher? Do you know Felicia Hatcher? You got to know Felicia Hatcher. You got to know. I'm like, who is this Felicia Hatcher? And then we finally start hanging in the same circles, attending the same events. And now we here.
We here. I love Vernon. And his first of all, if you have a last name Moxie,
right?
Like you're already automatically
you're cool
in my book.
That's a fact.
But his family, his daughter, being a young entrepreneur, I'm always picking up her book to my daughter. I'm like, you need to like go out and sell something. And so, shout out to them for sure.
Well, why do you think sometimes it don't translate to our kids to be or listen like? Listening to you would drastically move them forward. My kids listening to me would.
They don't listen to us.
Yes. Why do you? I'm trying to figure that out.
You know what? I'm a daughter of an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
My grandfather on my mom's side is a Jamaican sugarcane and yam farmer. So entrepreneurship.
Jamaican sugarcane and yam farmer. Yeah.
So entrepreneurship has been literally in my veins on both sides.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, we never called my grandfather an entrepreneur. Never, right? He just had farms, land in Jamaica, and like the family ate whatever he sold, they ate, right? I remember as a kid.
Did he sell it to him or just give it to him?
No, he would sell it.
Okay.
Otherwise, you don't eat, right? Yeah. And I remember as a kid, you know, my dad and my uncle started Hatcher Construction and Development probably when I was like maybe 8 or 9 years old. So my daughter's 10 now. Yeah. And I just knew that my dad worked really hard, came home dirty every day, didn't make it to any of my basketball games, didn't make it to any of my brother's t-ball games. Like, that's what I knew of entrepreneurship. I was never brought on to the construction site, neither was my brother. And so I think as kids, you only experience the lack, and then you get to a point where then you experience the financial benefit of it.
Mm.
And so my brother and I and my cousins are the financial beneficiaries of everything that stepping out on faith, starting a business, growing a business, sacrificing has to offer. I just didn't understand that in the context of a 10 or 11 year old kid.
Right.
And so now as a parent, I now have a better understanding of that. But quite frankly, I'm on the road a lot. And so I feel like I'm doing some of the exact same things to my kids that my dad did with us. It's like not bringing us in early enough to fully understand it. We talk about entrepreneurship so much in my family that my kids are like, you know, my daughter's teacher was telling me, your daughter is just like, I'm going to be just like my mom, right? Like, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and have businesses. And so I think the mistake that we make is being so busy with entrepreneurship and building companies that we don't bring our kids in every step of the process so they fully understand what you're building and it becomes a part of their vocabulary and their life.
So for you, when was the first, what was your first, everybody does it different. I know mine was candy. What was your first thing for you?
So my first thing wasn't like, it wasn't starting a business. I didn't do the ant farm. I didn't sell papers. I sold the heck out of Girl Scout cookies.
Okay.
Like, that was my first
entree. I wish they could benefit from that financially.
They should.
They should. Like, they 100.
Should,
I'm sure billions of dollars have been made from that.
A lot.
Wow. That's, I never thought
I sold the heck
that.
Out of Girl Scout cookies. I was the number one seller of Girl Scout cookies in my troop. And the what I realized of, like, that kind of disruptiveness, that analytical, logistical thinking that becomes our superpowers of entrepreneurs. My mom at the time worked at the Delray Beach Tax Collector's Office.
Wow.
Everybody had to come. This was a time where you weren't doing anything online. Everybody had to come to the office. And so I realized that my mom could just set up the boxes right there. And I sold out of Girl Scout cookies. I think I may have re-upped 4 or 5 times. And all I got was a badge.
Wow. Yeah.
But I got more than that later when I looked at it. It's just like, okay, I realized how to put other people to work. I realized like find the traffic source. I realized like, hey, all the other girls are going to be sitting up in front of a grocery store or Publix or hitting up their parents. And meanwhile, my mom had this traffic source. And so I say that's my entree into it because that's when the wheels start turning, that there's other ways and non-traditional ways to do things if you just look at it with a different set of eyes.
That's good. That's good. So what Vernon was talking about, he was talking about, like, you in tech. I mean, you're a philanthropist. You're in tech. You got every award under the sun. When did all of that start? Well, did that start with Black Tech Week? Did that start with your first book? Mm-hmm. Did that start because you were a C student, right? When did you say I'm going all in on this?
Yeah, I tell this story all the time, but it started being a C student, right? Where, you know, people were saying you're gonna have to enroll in dropout prevention classes, and so there was like this doubt. But I was also 16 years old. I taught myself how to code. Wow. I could rewire cable into my room. None of that translated into
wire cable.
Rewire cable. So my parents bought me a TV for Christmas, but they wouldn't put cable because they didn't really want me to watch the TV.
Right.
And so I learned how to rewire cable. MacGyver was my favorite show as a kid.
Yeah.
And so as a kid, I felt like I could solve any problem with some rubber bands, a paper clip, a screwdriver, all the things that MacGyver did. And so that's what I did. And I constantly would do these things, break things, put them back together. Had no idea that these were the characteristics and the making of being innovative, starting businesses, solving problems for people. Because what I was told is the only measure of success is how well you do in the classroom. And I was not well
in
the classroom.
Yeah.
And so going through that journey of being a C student, having my guidance counselor tell me I'd never make it to a college or university because of my grades, and then proceeded to not help me, and taking kind of that breaking things apart, putting things back together, I end up winning $130,000 in scholarships as a C student. Mm. My GPA never touched a 3.0.
Wow.
Maybe on the way down, but like never on the way up, right? And I learned some really important big lessons at 17 that have served me and everything that I've done leading up to this point.
I want to hear them lessons. Share
one of the biggest lessons was there's more than one pathway to success.
Yeah.
That you can be non-traditional and still succeed. That people are going to doubt you because they're projecting their
fears
negative
on
belief
you.
And their fears on you.
Yep.
You know, my guidance counselor told me not only will you never make it to a college or university, you should just try and get a job or go to vocational school.
You ever pull back up on the guy?
Oh, yeah. Not intentionally.
Yeah.
I got invited to speak at my high school maybe 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was telling this story because it's an important story that changed my life. Yeah. And the assistant principal, I think she just put two and two together. She's like, let me take you on a tour of the campus. And we stopped. The first stop we made was at that guidance counselor's office.
Wow.
I was like, oh, you messy.
Wow.
Real messy. And, you know, the guidance counselor said something to me in that conversation because she was actually in the presentation and she left. She's like, I don't remember saying that to you.
Mm-hmm.
And when people hurt you, it never bothers them or stays with them as long as it stays with you and shapes you and molds you.
Yeah.
Into something else. And I was like, you did say that to me. And I end up finding myself kind of helping her through the trauma that she inflicted on me. And what I also realized is that I just kind of skirted through high school. Like, I was in all the sports, all the clubs. I'm a kinesthetic learner, so I have to like immerse myself in the learning.
What type of learning you call it?
Kinesthetic. So I love working with my hands.
Got it, okay.
Or if I see something, I just need to see it done once and then I can replicate it.
Got it. You're not really a book.
I read books.
I know you read books, but
I don't process it the same
as being like being at a mastermind versus reading or looking. Right, right. Got it. Yep, same.
If I can, I can see like the nuanced things that are done on stage, pick it up faster than reading.
100%.
Like I can comprehend it, but not the same thing.
Yep.
And then I know exactly what to do with it. And I feel like you're the, you're the same,
same
way.
Yep.
But what I found in that.
That's important. Now I want to stop you.
Yeah.
I just want, now it makes me think I need to learn my people need to learn, my kids. I need to learn their learning styles. Cause if I'm telling you to go memorize this, I'm making, and you're not, that's not your style. It's not, it's almost like a disassessment for learning.
Yeah.
Mm, okay.
And it's important to do that as soon as possible with your kids because they all have different learning styles.
Yeah.
Mm. But we're all put in the exact same classroom.
The exact taught the same way.
Taught the same way and expect different outcomes.
Wow. And that's the difference between the A student, the B student, C, because we're all taking it in a different way.
And most A students work for C students.
Yeah, facts.
You know?
Facts.
And so, and there was, there's a quote that's that was really helpful for me getting through that was an Albert Einstein quote that said, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its entire life thinking that it's stupid.
Mm.
And like, to me, that's the importance of making sure that we understand young people's learning styles. Yeah. And even as adults, learning like the best way in which you consume information, you acquire the knowledge and then know how to apply the knowledge. And I didn't know that. I just thought that I was a slacker. I cared more about boys and basketball in high school. And I had this lady who didn't know me try to determine what the rest of my life was going to look like.
Mm.
And I went, ended up winning $130,000 in scholarships. And like that was the lesson that I learned, that you can also get very creative with limited resources. And more than anything, like there is literally opportunity and money for everyone. And I literally raised my first $130,000 in capital to fund my education as a 17-year-old.
Wow. And but that was a scholarship too.
That was scholarships.
You didn't have to pay it back.
Yeah. Scholarships and grants.
Let me talk. I want to talk about this for a second, with you being in that world in terms of scholarships and grants. Mm-hmm. There are so many out here that are being unused. Like, I remember, and this was me, like, well, you could get a scholarship. I never applied because I just assumed no one's giving me a scholarship. I feel like so many more people could potentially go to college for free if you just filled out some scholarships and stuff like that.
Fill out scholarships, start positioning yourself.
Yeah. When you say position yourself, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I always tell that there's this golf scholarship that I picked up the application, had a low GPA requirement. So I'm like, bet, like, that's me.
Yeah.
But you had to join, like, you had to be a part of the golf team.
Yeah.
You didn't have to be good.
Yeah.
You just had to be a part of it.
Yeah.
And so what I mean by positioning is like, man, I could join the golf team before the application deadline was up in order to qualify for that. I think sometimes people think that rules are so rigid that they don't look for, not necessarily like the loopholes, but like, what is the opportunity that I can position myself to qualify for this before the deadline?
Yeah.
And I tell founders and entrepreneurs that all the time. I was just like, hey, this is something that you may not have now, but can you get it in the next 2 months before? And then guess what? Now you automatically qualify for it. And so there were so many opportunities from a scholarship standpoint at 17 years old that I realized like, hey, I don't have, you know, 1,500 volunteer hours, but guess what? The next 2 months, I can go crazy
and go
meet that number and then be able to qualify for that opportunity. And so these are the lessons that I learned at 17 before I fully understood these were business lessons, but they served me so well in like that next stage of my life, graduating high school.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. What are, up until this point, what are a few mistakes that founders and CEOs need to avoid? Like, up until this point, I know you made a ton of them. I made a ton of them.
Yeah.
And I see you like, woo, which one do I share?
We'll be here all day.
Yeah, but share me one or two that, like for me, one of them, I guess one of them would mean, one of mine would mean, well, a mistake that I learned, I wish I would have learned marketing sooner. Mm. I wish I had a mentor and a coach. And it's, sometimes they call that cliche because I coach or I met. No, but I really wish I would be so much further because I was doing something that it was a business. But me and Russell, I always say me and Russell Brunson started at the same time.
Uh-huh.
I just started with a junk removal and cleaning business. Nothing wrong with, or a fruit truck selling dollar bags of fruit. He started with a marketing company.
Right, right.
We're running up the same ladder, but I was on the wrong wall.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So,
and I think that's what people don't understand about the role of mentorship and kind of conflating time, right? Time is the biggest commodity that none of us get back.
Facts.
It's time is expensive,
yep.
Right? We know that time is like way more expensive than money. You can always get money back. But if someone wastes your time,
yep.
Or your time is wasted because you don't have the knowledge or the skill set, you'll get there eventually because you got the drive and the passion. But like, if I can get those 2 or 3 years back that I wasted spinning the wheel, like imagine how much farther I can be, or imagine how much flow and less stress that it would have been to get to that point. And so much of the work that I do now is literally saving entrepreneurs that heartache.
Yeah, which is good. And I think that's so important, just to be able to save people that time. Mm-hmm. So tell me about now, and I want to go, like, you're crushing it, CEO of Black Ambition Prize, like, yeah. Like, and this is one of Pharrell's companies. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you do that? I mean, you went entrepreneur, creating the Tech Week and yeah. all these different things, philanthropic efforts. And now I feel like it's probably all leading up to what you're doing now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, tell me about how did this even come about
work with Pharrell? The journey between working for Nintendo and Sony, the NBA,
yeah.
launching a food company,
yeah.
launching Black Tech Week, which we sold a few yeah. years ago to Lightship Capital,
Oof.
Launching the Center for
How good did that feel to sell something you created?
It felt amazing.
Yeah.
It was a little bittersweet, right? But it was amazing, and it's still amazing. And so, you know, sometimes you can only build a company to a certain point.
Yeah. 100.
And you got to know what your limitations are.
Yeah.
And you can either let it die, or you can like see it in somebody else's arm.
Yeah.
Right. And so being able to walk into that conference now, see what Brian and Candace and the team have done with it. Like, people ask me, like, how do you feel? I was like, I feel fine.
Yeah.
Because I knew that where it could potentially go, I didn't have the capacity.
And you could do it again.
And I can do it again.
Yeah.
Right.
100%.
So to be able to sell something, but have the clarity of saying like, it's time to sell the thing. I think
when did you sell it?
I think 3 years ago now.
Let me ask you, who told you could sell? Like, you know, we especially talking about in our African Americans. Mm-hmm. Not often do we know about a succession plan, which we talked about, that you could sell a bit. Normally, when we're done with a business, you just shut the business.
Shut the doors.
But you successfully sold. Like, did somebody tell you, were you studying something? Like, what made you say, yo, when you started, did you say, I'm going to build this and I'm going to sell it?
No, yeah. Not at all. I think, I mean, being in the tech space, I knew that that's a possibility,
yeah.
right? That's literally why entrepreneurs in that space are called founders for
yeah.
a reason,
yeah.
right? They founded the thing. There'll always be a legacy, but there's a succession that's a part of it because, you know, entrepreneurs want to cash out, their investors want to be able to cash out, right? Prior to that, I did not know that that was a possibility. I mean, we sold Feverish, but it wasn't a big sale, nothing to even brag about. But I did not know it. And I think because there's a lot of shame associated with being Black and selling a company means that you've sold out.
I hear that so often, especially all these hair care brands. They sell them for $250, $300. Why are you mad? I'm excited for them.
You should be, because guess what? Now yeah. they can be investors.
100%.
They got the capital to build other companies,
yeah.
like invest in other companies
yeah.
in a way that most of them probably never had the capital to do so
yeah.
until the acquisition. And then the other part of that is you have no idea what their succession plan was.
100%.
And so you literally project.
And if you don't have one, you want them to sell for $100 million or a few million or... Go out of business.
And yeah. they can't help anybody else.
Yeah.
And they can't help themselves. Yeah. And that's the reality. I think that's where like the knowledge sharing more of like, this is actually the way business works.
Yeah.
And of course you want to keep a business in our community for as long as possible. And like, we've romanticized this like legacy of businesses staying around. And guess what? People are struggling. Or they're ready to tap out and do something different. Don't we want to afford them that freedom as a result of them stepping out on faith and building businesses, but being massive employers? Yes. And the other part of that is like, you got to have that plan in the beginning too. And so, you know, one of a good friend of ours, Rudy, when we were running our food business at the time, he asked us, he was just like, you know, in the very beginning, you got to make a decision. Do you want to keep the business in your family for generations? Or do you want to sell it? And he's like, whether you want to keep the business in your family for generations or you want to sell it, you move forward and always operate as if you're going to sell the business. Because then you start putting systems in place.
That's good. But always I don't want them to miss that, Felicia. Always operate as if you're going to sell the business from the very beginning.
Yeah.
That's good.
Because then you
that's powerful though.
It is.
SOPs now. All Loom of it. Like you're documenting the product.
Every single
that's good.
But then you're also looking to fire yourself as the CEO as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And I think so many of us hold on to
the tell me what that looks like. Because I want to do that. You know what I'm saying?
It's a lot of putting the systems in place, right? It's a lot of trusting people. It's also fully understanding what your genius is and your highest contribution to the company
that's
is.
That's good.
And what's not.
That's good.
And then it's also making sure that you've put some sort of growth plan in place so that you know what it looks like when it's time for you to tap out, right?
So we talking about, because you giving a lot of gems. I don't want to, you giving a lot. Like I'm about to pull my phone out. Creating a growth plan. Firing yourself as the CEO.
As soon as possible, yeah.
As soon as possible. Starting the business with the intention that I'm going to sell this. Even if I may don't sell it in a year or whenever, but I'm putting SOPs and plans together. This is good. This is powerful.
And the standard operating procedures are so important. And so many of us don't take the time to be able to do that, right? We think that we're going to be healthy forever. We think that we're going to live forever. We think that we're never going to run out of money and like all of those things. And so like that part is extremely, extremely important. And I think then advisors, whether they are mentors or consultants that you need to hire to really help you structure what the road ahead looks like.
Okay.
I say all that because when I left Center for Black Innovation to come run Black Ambition, I did not have a succession plan in place the way that I needed to.
Yeah.
And that transition was extremely, extremely hard for me.
You didn't have a succession plan for the previous company.
Correct.
Yep, got
correct.
It. Mm-hmm.
And emotionally, it was really hard.
Yep.
So even to make that decision that I wanted to do something different after 7 years, I had to go to therapy.
Wow.
In order to just process that, right? Wow. And I recommend that being the other part that people think about. Of like the emotional disconnection from who you were to now who you need to become and whatever this next thing that like your body is telling you that you want to do.
Mm.
And for me, one of the mistakes that we made that I've been really kind of careful to not make in this new position is the company was me. And I was just like, if I leave, what is going to happen? And then my personal identity was connected to it. So I had to say, well, who am I without this role, without this recognition? And I didn't have the answers for that. It really kind of took me a full year to be able to separate myself. And then I was just like, okay, now I'm ready.
Mm.
But if someone pushes back, like, no, you can't leave, I don't have the vocabulary to defend that. I know that I want it, but I needed I needed some depth to the conversation that I can have to arm myself to not kind of go back into this thing that everybody else wanted me to stay. But I knew that if I stayed, I would be causing more harm than good.
That's good.
And I don't think enough entrepreneurs have that conversation of like the emotional toll of transitioning, moving on, selling a business, doing something different.
Yeah.
And so going to therapy literally gave me a vocabulary that I needed, kind of like an armor to when someone says, no, you can't leave, or what are you gonna do? Well, I can leave. This is what it's going to look like. I may not necessarily have the full plan, but I know that if I love this thing, the best love that I can like give back to it is transitioning and finding somebody else that can play that role and do the things that I cannot do.
Yeah.
And that ended up being multifold, right? And so Black Tech Week and that transition and that sell, and then the transition from Center for Black Innovation as well.
Let me ask you this, with that succession plan, outside of SOPs, what are the meetings that's being had? Mm. What are some critical things that need to happen in this plan for this type of pass off or this sell?
Yeah.
Because someone listening, they're going to get to this point and is like, what now?
Mm. There's customer conversations and a comms plan that has to be a part of that. For us, it was
customer conversations.
Yeah,
because like having letting your customer know somebody new is going to take over?
Correct.
Because you lose. What about risking? I would risk losing the customer.
Potentially, if you don't have a comms plan in place that communicates that in the right way. Right?
Comms plan, communication plan.
Communication
plan. Okay. So you got to talk to me. I'm new to, new to selling me a company.
And,
so.
And having probably a few different versions of your copy that you're going to send out to be able to respond and be ready to whatever apprehension that people have. If they say like, hey, I'm leaving because you're not here anymore. Or like there's all of those things that are just very natural emotions that people will have, especially if the founder is the face of the brand. Mm. There's a connection to your product, but more than anything, they were connected
to you.
To you, right? And so being able to communicate that, I think before you get to that point, you have to have some transition planning with your team. And so I started attending meetings less and kind of trying to prop up and prioritize other people on my team to be able to take over those meetings in my absence, right? Mm-hmm. And so people got more comfortable like dealing with other people on the team when they would usually just kind of come to me or the comfort was me.
Yeah.
Some relationships work through that. I'll be honest, some didn't necessarily survive that because the connection was Felicia, I'm going wherever Felicia is going.
Yep.
Some employees didn't survive that either because they're like, I'm only here because of you.
You,
And so if you're leaving, I'm looking for something. I'm looking for something else too. And so it was very hard for me to reconcile that.
That makes sense on why one of my team members left, someone else left. Mm-hmm. I mean, like her boss. Okay.
It's hard. And I don't think that there's enough resources for people to kind of point to of like, how do I have this conversation with transition. I mean, people transition every day.
Yeah.
I just don't think that people have enough of a full breath conversation about the nuances, the levels of all of that.
Yeah.
And I think there's social media, there's all these other things that you can do in the right way. But I think it's a lot of kind of reassuring people that this is the best decision for the sustainability of the thing. But then sometimes you just have to have real conversations. This is the best decision for the sustainability of me.
Mm.
Like if you want me to survive,
yeah,
I'm telling you that like I can't survive in this capacity and anymore. And it's hard.
Yeah, that's good. Let me ask you this question. I want to talk to you about, and it's something I want you helping me learn and educate me, advisory boards for companies.
Yeah.
Like talk to me through like our... Do you pay people to be on advisory boards? How are you selecting them on advisory boards? Is there a certain amount of people? But when you start playing at a higher level, I'm curious just how are those things working?
Ooh, there's so many different ways to do it.
Okay.
So many different ways to do it. And I oftentimes recommend entrepreneurs doing it before they even need it.
Got it.
Mm. Sometimes if you do it and structure it the right way, it allows you to be able to just tap into some amazing brains that you can't pay for from a talent acquisition standpoint from a big tech company or a major corporation.
Yep.
And so like, hey, can you serve as an advisor? I think what that looks like, you got to make sure that it's fair for the other person in a number of ways, right? And so does it need to be face-to-face meetings? Probably not. It can be a phone call. It can be a text. It can be a Voxer. I just want to be, and please don't say pick your brain. I hate.
Oh, Woo!
Lord have mercy, please. Woo! Everyone stop
that's
saying
probably that. Top three
pet peeves. As like if someone asked me
probably top brain, two and not two,
I will turn away. I was like, no.
You know what I do? Out of love, Felicia, I'd be like, listen, out of love, I'm gonna let you know. Uh-huh. Don't ever ask me that again.
Yeah.
It's to me, it's like surgery. It's taking.
I literally have the image of someone like picking every time they say it. It's like a visceral reaction that turns.
Hey, bro, I want to link up so I can pick your brain. Like what?
No.
No. It's not happening.
One, this is an expensive brain.
Yes.
Two, I just hate the term because
it's a form of taking. Yeah.
It feels like you're taking.
I get nothing out of the deal. How does this sound attractive to me?
At all.
Oh.
And so, and it's not that we don't want to give because we give.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? Wholeheartedly, abundantly. But like that image just feels, it just feels gross. And so sometimes I'll check, especially young people, I'm like, don't ever ask me that. Like, I'm here to help you. I'll answer your questions, but don't say that term.
Please.
And you don't realize how many people don't respond to you because you email them that term or you text them that term or you DM that term.
Because they're getting nothing out of it.
But you have
it's a one-way street.
It's a one-way. But you can create a two-way street, yeah. Right?
And so when I don't mind helping you as a one-way street, but ask me the right way.
Ask me the
right way. Hey, big bro, you mind giving me, can I ask you, can I get a little bit of advice?
Yeah.
That was so much smoother.
And respectful.
Yeah.
And
listen to this episode, you probably understand having one source of income is too close to none. And as one of the wealthiest people in the world, Warren Buffett says, if you don't find a way to make money in your sleep, you will work until you die. With that being said, I am finally exposing the industry to this very unique, very secretive way to make money in real estate that no one is talking about. No, I'm not talking about wholesaling. No, I'm not talking about fix and flips. No, I'm not talking about rehabs, right? No, I'm not talking about flipping contracts. I'm talking about event spaces. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and show you for $300. I'm going to waive that $300 fee and give you access to my free masterclass where I'm going to show you how to find your own location. I'm going to show you how to fund your own location. I'm going to show you how to automate this entire process. The same process that I help hundreds and hundreds of people do, I'm now pulling back the curtains. I'm going to help you do the same thing. So what I want you to do right now, go to eventspacemasterclass.com right now. Go ahead and register. And as soon as you're done, go back to the episode. Once again, go to eventspacemasterclass.com. I will see you in our next class.
Man.
Yeah, and I can say yes or I can say no or, you know.
Yeah.
But
the advisory board and kind of going back to that and making it mutually beneficial is really important, right? Mm-hmm. And so like as you put your advisory board together, also think about who are the other members on your board, your advisory board, that the people that you're asking can benefit by being in close proximity to. That's why people join nonprofit board. I mean, you join the nonprofit board to serve, but you're also looking to build your network at every stage. And if I'm going to spend intimate time working and servicing this organization without compensation, you know, the value to me is intimate time with high net worth, high
everybody else in
individuals
there.
Yeah, that are going to serve in that capacity with me, that becomes a power. And so I always tell people, if you're building an advisory board, then make sure that like you're stacking the advisory board with other people that those people, they want to be able to do business together. They want to be able to build a relationship. And then that commonality in that thread is that they get to do it in service of supporting you and you're building your thing.
Is there a certain number of people who should be on it? Or
from an advisory board standpoint, I think it's just a matter of who says yes and like your capacity to be able to manage that those relationships and be able to manage like that structure of the advisory board that you're putting together.
Okay, so let's talk about the prize. Y'all are investing over $3 million every year in a small. Into businesses,
yeah,
to help them grow, reach new heights. Mm-hmm. Give guidance.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to talk me through. I want to hear eligibilities. Yeah. What y'all looking for? Are y'all looking for certain type of businesses? Because someone here is listening. Like I'm looking for that type of investment.
Yeah. So Black Ambition was founded by Pharrell Williams 4 years ago.
Nice.
To create uninterrupted opportunities to entrepreneurship and through entrepreneurship.
Yep.
And so we know that diverse entrepreneurs, Black, Hispanic, and HBCU entrepreneurs are those that we invest in, need like high level mentorship.
Mm-hmm.
Not that like your pitch deck look good, go ahead.
Yep.
But, like,
go do your thing. No.
I have the buyer for Target on my phone.
Yeah.
You need to get on Target shelves. Let me conflate that time for you and pick up the phone and leverage my relationship and reputation.
Powerful.
If they're not doing that, they don't need to be your mentor because at the end of the day, they don't believe in you enough.
Yep.
If they don't pick up the phone.
Yeah, that's good. I like it.
Capital, right? Yep. And so we really serve as that friends and family and seed capital for these entrepreneurs, the coaching that they need. The
Which
community.
Is important. That's all. The coaching and the community maybe more important than the money.
A lot of times it is, right? Because it's access to a network and a community of people that you would normally not ever have access
100%.
To. 100%. And then care is the other C that I prioritize in how I've built Black Ambition is because I went back to the therapy that I needed to transition to building something else is also the therapy that most of our entrepreneurs need because many of us grew up with a very toxic relationship to money.
Facts.
there were financial institutions that every possible thing predatory that they could do to us financially, they did to us financially.
Facts.
And so now we're running businesses that we're looking for investment. We're looking for corporate partners. We're looking for customers. We don't know how to price it.
Yeah.
We don't know how to ask not for our worth, but ask for the value that we're putting out into the marketplace.
Yeah, that's
good. We don't know how to evaluate our companies because like this thing comes really easy to me. How dare it be valued at whatever?
Mm.
And so there's all these things that we literally got to wash away from our mental and our body around finding.
Almost got to purge.
You literally have to purge.
Yeah.
But you got to do it in a safe space.
Yeah.
And so we have this Evoke program that we have a part of Black Ambition that's literally therapists in group settings. And then we pay for a bucket of one-on-one sessions so these entrepreneurs can mentally be able to take care of themselves, take care of their businesses, their families.
Hey, what's the website? Because how do they apply?
BlackAmbitionPrize.com.
It's
all of that, Neo, but then it's also... many of them for the first time are having to navigate proximity to power and wealth.
Yeah.
And oftentimes power and wealth does not look like them.
Yeah.
And so there's this really weird dynamic that day in and day out you're battling and you may not necessarily have the tools in which to navigate that power dynamic of being in a high level of access of everything that you need now. Well, if you have everything you need, the hardest decision is actually, picking the exact thing that you need to accelerate your business. And when we're talking about proximity to power, there's a dynamic that can swallow you whole if you don't know what to do with it or if you don't have a high value within yourself.
Yeah.
And so our entrepreneurs, once we invest in them, are stepping into a new level of leadership. They're stepping into a new level of capital, sometimes for the first time. And it's really hard for them to navigate without the right professional tools to support them. And so that's why we have that as a part of the
program. And one of your, one of the prizes of the $3 million is one company will be getting $1 million.
Yeah.
It's a huge investment.
It's a huge investment. Yeah. We've invested in 101 companies in the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Those companies between the 250 that we mentor every single year through 3-month program, and then we invest in about 35 of those companies every year. They've gone on to raise $95 million.
Wow.
So the capital is there to support the entrepreneurs. Yeah. If you give them what they need, when they need it, give them all the resources and then kind of get out of their way so that they can do the thing.
Yeah.
And so like it's proven that that model works and supports.
How are you selecting? What's the selection process? Like you said, get out the way and go do the thing.
Yeah.
How do I know their ambition? How do I know they have integrity? Is there some sort of screening process for? Because I've worked with people and they say one thing, but don't do the thing they say. And then it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So.
We source the deals essentially from an application process. And so we get applications all over the US. We usually average about 2,000 applications a year.
Wow.
We have over 100 application reviewers that take each application between 2 to 3 rounds of reviews. From there, we select 250 companies from the initial 2,000. And we take them through a 3-month cohort style mentorship program. So they're broken into pods, assign a mentor for each circle, a really dope group of entrepreneurs as a part of their community, and 3 months.
That whether you get the money or not, you still built a
hell of a team, hell of a squad, hell of a support system. And that 3 months, they're getting high level mentorship, high level support. But then we are also evaluating them. Are they showing up when they're supposed to show up to the program? How are they contributing? Do they know when to extract? Because you got to contribute before you extract.
Yeah.
And so there's all these unspoken things that we're looking for that are part of the application. But we're also looking at them. They're for-profit companies, but we're looking at them to have the heart and soul of a social entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Right? You're not necessarily maybe starting a nonprofit, but you're going to contribute back into your community massively in some sort of way. And it's in your heart and it's a part of your value system. And so that's where we get to test the integrity.
I like that. So before I even know, like you spending 3 months with me. So the 250 that's selected, that's all the individuals who did the application. And these 250, meaning those 3 months, it's not costing them for that?
No.
What?
We pay for everything, for all the support that they get for those 3 months.
Hey guys, if you're looking at this, I want you to stop what you're doing. My sister Felicia is literally breaking down how to help your business get to the next level. Someone looking at this, right? And I'm hoping it's you. Somebody's going to walk away with $1 million investment for their business, right? Several other people are going to be walking away with different investment amounts as well. But the biggest thing that I take away, even if you didn't walk away, 250 of the 2,000 applicants is going to get coaching from her and her team over the period of 3 months. So just think about this idea. Imagine you learning for 3 months about structuring your business, about board of advisors, about all of these cool things. And even if you didn't win, now you got a team. Now you're connected with other lifelong business partners, other investors. And then some of you may happen to win. So make sure you go to blackambitionprize.com so you can go ahead and get registered and go ahead and apply to see if you're a good fit for this opportunity. Let's get back to the show. So Felicia, I want to know, because even when we talked offline, you said even, I believe, Pharrell was even on the cap table for some of these things, or what he may invest in.
Through Black Ambition.
Yeah,
right?
But through Black Ambition, yeah.
And it's not just...
Tell me what a cap table is, though. Yeah. I want, because I hear Jay talk about it in the rap. People still like, yo, what the splits is.
Right.
Break down a cap table for me.
A cap table is essentially, sometimes it's as simple as a spreadsheet that lists all of your investors.
Got it. Okay.
And what their equity stake is.
So you made that simple for me. Thank you.
I like to make things very simple for people, because
I'm like, cap table.
Sometimes
like,
people overcomplicate these things unnecessarily because it gives them value.
Got
right?
it.
Like, no.
So this company is the name of this company. Here are our investors on this company. And here's what each entity owns.
Correct.
Got it.
And like,
these are the people who are a part of this. So now when I'm going to somebody, hey, Mark Cuban's a part of this. Mm-hmm. Kevin Hart is a part of this. Pharrell's a part of this. Felicia Hatcher's a part of this. Got it.
And for like the entrepreneurs that we invest in, like that is its weight in gold.
Yeah.
Right.
Because 100%.
So many times navigating like the startup and venture ecosystem, you may be having a great conversation with an investor, but they don't want to be first money in.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to take the risk. They want someone else to de-risk. And
is that called seed money?
It could be seed. It could be a friend's seed, pre-seed. Like it, there's.
Can we talk through those rounds? Just so if like, because there's a lot that I, from friends and family round, pre-seed round, series A.
Series D.
And how do I not dilute the company? And
yeah, there's a lot of terminology around it.
Yes.
I think one of the best books that I recommend to entrepreneurs often is Venture Deals.
Okay. Oh yeah, you told me. I think I got it on my Audible.
It's thick like this. Yeah. My husband Derek recommends it often. Yeah. But it almost becomes like your startup Bible in the sense that it breaks things down for you. Venture Deals.
Yeah.
And so you have
should have it.
Your friends and family round, which is literally what it means, right? Like your friends and family should be seeding some initial money into your business. Most of our families, not all of them, but most of them, our friends and family can only give us a round of applause and not a round of funding.
Talk about it.
You're doing a good job.
Yep. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I wish you the best.
I wish you the best. Sometimes our cities can only do the same thing, right? Like they can prop you up and post you, but they can't actually give you funding.
Mm.
And so our entrepreneurs don't have the runway that they need to ideate to when we talk about failing fast. Like these are all the things that should be happening in that stage with that little capital that you get from your friends and family. In the absence of that, you got to go out and find it, right? And that's where prize competitions like ours or accelerators that are giving you some funding are really helpful, right? That next stage of funding that you're raising is like your pre-seed and then your seed. Then you get to a point where you're raising your Series A, your Series B. You're talking about big dollars at this point, right? You've not only proven yourself, you've had some massive traction. You have a great cap table of investors, and you're looking for serious dollars.
Yeah.
10 million, 20 million, 30, 100 million. Those are the different stages. For entrepreneurs, you got to be very careful about how much equity you give away in the very beginning.
100%.
And that's the mistake that I see a lot of the entrepreneurs that we interface with make, right? Hey, I don't have any money to give you, but I'm trying to bring you from Facebook, from Meta. I'm trying to bring in this top talent. I'm going to give you a sizable stake in the company in exchange for future equity when we hit it big.
Yeah.
And guess what? Now you don't have enough equity in order to offer an investor that's coming up with some real dollars in which you need to have the runway to get to the next stage. Yeah. These are the problems that I see happening. But again, it goes back to that toxic relationship with money. So we don't either fully understand
and
how to value it.
You don't know what you don't know.
And you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the most freeing things for me, one of the most freeing things that I tell entrepreneurs is it's okay to be dumb.
Yeah.
It's literally okay, not okay to be dumb, but yeah, it's okay to say, I do not have
figuring it out.
For this.
Yeah.
I need your help. I need your guidance. I have a question. What are the top books to read in this? What program should I join? These are all very fair things. No one knows what the heck they're doing in totality. They just don't.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to figure it out. And when new technology comes along, I think it's always the best time to then go in and ask the dumb technology questions.
Yeah.
Because everyone is trying to figure out AI right now. Oh, no one has it fully figured
that's
out.
That's a fact.
Right? And so
and Sam Altman saying you could build a $1 billion business with just you and AI.
I believe some it. Point. I
yeah.
see it.
Yeah.
It's crazy. There.
It's wild.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this question. So kind of somewhat off topic, mm-hmm. but I've been talking to my buddy Doug. I'm like, bro, let's buy a pickleball team. Like this new surge and I was on the phone with him earlier. He said the highest paid pickleball player now is getting $2.5 million a year. I think his name Ben Johnson, I don't remember. But last year was something way lower.
Yeah.
It's a surge. I'm like, bro, I don't think there'll be a cheaper time
than now
to buy a professional pickleball team. Because, and I heard they're around anywhere from $5 to $10 million. Don't quote me, but all right, I want to go raise money to buy a pickleball team. Yeah. What are things I should be doing knowing I've never done pickleball?
Right.
It's just I want to be a part of this opportunity because I'm forecasting in 10 years, this will be like like tennis.
Or any of the big games.
Or any of the big games. Uh-huh. And I'm like,
What do you do? We invested in, I think 2023, we invested in a pickleball company.
See, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like.
And so what do you do in those initial stages when you're raising capital?
Am I looking for somebody that ran a pickleball? It's like, if I'm building this from scratch, I want to hear you. Walk me through.
It might be really hard to find someone who did pickleball before.
100%.
I believe it's brand new. Don't quote me on that, but I believe it's new.
Yeah.
But you can find people that are sports enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still love sports and it's a part of sports,
yep.
right? You can find people that are first users, right? Mm-hmm. Or like early adopters is what I'm trying to say. They may be early adopters into technology, into anything, but they love to be the first person to discover something.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that you want to start having conversations with, right? I think this environment, and you have done it so brilliantly for years, also lends itself to conversations about people that spark the curiosity that leads to like, hey, let's do something together.
Yeah.
And I think pickleball is the future of that.
Yeah.
The other part of that I think is really helpful is like having conversations with government, like local municipalities, because they are going to be running the facilities. They have funding for the facilities as well. And so like you should be having conversations about what their plans are for pickleball, where they cover the cost of the infrastructure and the build out. And then you come in with maybe the app that does the scheduling, like we've seen explode with soccer, right?
Wow.
Whatever process, right?
Wow.
Like you should also be looking at your local municipality as a
Because listen, this is something new. In Philly, there's no courts. He was just saying, bro, there's no courts in Philly. He's going over to Jersey. There's so many abandoned, it's funny, I just told y'all, I'm going to Philly to do a commencement speech. I'm like, I want to redo this old tennis court. Let's turn it into a pickleball. I've never played, but it's like, but now it may be a question for a government official. Oh, we do need to bring this to West Philadelphia. We don't have this. It'll bring new people here.
And all you have to do is I don't know, follow the money sounds really bad, but follow the headlines, follow the money, right? If you see that your local municipality has just gotten, funding for capital improvements of the new rec center, are they thinking about the future of recreation in that community?
Yeah.
Maybe not. And that's an opportunity for you to propose because it literally just told you that they have the funding in order to do these things.
Yeah.
And so I think oftentimes people just don't look at that. People come to me often and it's just like, well, what do you do if you're trying to find money or raise money for your nonprofit? I was like, do you still register? Do you still subscribe to the newspaper, like the print newspaper?
Mm-hmm.
People don't want to do that anymore. I was like, you want to find who the wealthiest people are in your community? Subscribe to the Sunday newspaper, pull out the arts and culture section.
Yeah.
And that arts and culture section is going to tell you all the wealthiest people in your community, who their wives are, who their husbands are, the causes that they care about, mm-hmm. their first name, their last name, their photo. Yep. No one takes the time to go back to the foundational stuff that gives you clues, right?
That's good.
So the arts and culture section, and then follow what your government is investing in, because they are the ones who run the recreation facilities in your community, and they have funding for improvements every few years or every few decades. And you can introduce them to something that they do not know.
That's a hack. Woo. And that's thinking, we talked earlier about, I forgot the statement you called it, but if you could recall, something like, essentially, if I go find a scholarship, and
positioning.
It's position yourself. Like if I go find a scholarship but a requirement to join the golf team, join the golf team. You don't got to be a golf. It don't say be a golf expert, but that's positioning. Like, hey, I would like to be one of the first people to bring pickleball to the city of Philadelphia. What do y'all have in y'all pipeline or available where we could get this done?
The other thing is, and when people ask me about sponsorship, because we have really amazing corporate partners with Black Ambition. We had really amazing corporate partners and sponsors with Black Tech Week. That was how we paid the bills, right? I was just like, well, look at the last pickleball thing, whether it was national or in your city, in your state.
Who are the
sponsors? Look at who all the sponsors are.
I be saying it. I be going into conferences just reading the sponsors.
Because
that mean they're willing to give money again.
They are willing. It's a budget line.
Just got to find a person.
It's an interest for them. Right. And now that you know that if they're sponsoring, especially if they're a high level sponsor, you better believe somebody from that company is there.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit
That's
of research
that
most people just don't do.
Facts. Ooh, if they're a big sponsor, someone's there.
Someone's there.
Mm.
And they're more than likely, they're probably speaking, because it's probably the part of the sponsorship.
Yeah. Opportunity.
Package.
Yeah.
And it is difficult, but oftentimes we make things difficult. Right. And like, success literally leaves clues. And oftentimes it's right in front of us.
Yeah.
And I have so many conversations, because we built a conference and then we sold a conference, and people always ask, I'm like, man, I'm trying to get my event sponsored. I'm trying to get my conference sponsored. Well, go look up five conferences or five brunches or five events. Look at who their sponsors are and pick up the phone
and call them. You know what's up? You know the thing, Felicia? Some things sound so simple. You know what I mean? Like, I also got this thing what I've been on lately, and I want everybody to understand. It's called Get the Facts.
Mm.
And the concept that I came up with Get the Facts is, you know what I mean? People have not started something because they heard someone say, like, I almost didn't start the cleaning company because they said insurance is so hard to get.
Right.
It is like the hardest thing to get. Yeah. And I ended up, meaning that's what they told me.
Yeah,
and I downloaded that and I believed that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, you know what? Maybe how about I call the company? For me to get $1 million insurance policy was $100 a month.
Yeah.
$100 a month. I was speaking to a guy the other day and he's like, I'm like, yo, tell me he do valet parking. Like, yeah. So I partnered with the guy to do valet parking. I'm like, bro, you should do your own thing. Well, yeah. No, he keep telling me how hard the insurance is. Mm-hmm. It's just so hard. I said, did you call an insurance company?
And find out for yourself.
No. And you've been with them for 5 to 7 years. Like, get the facts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, let somebody who has the power to tell me no,
right,
or it's not possible. I ain't in the assuming game.
Me either.
I had somebody come to an event. It's like, did you try to get in before they told you no? Like, yo, I don't got the credentials. Did you even try? Like, at least walk up. Like, what's the requirements to get in this?
Yeah.
Or, I'm on the list. Oh, you don't see me on it? I'm just saying, try.
Right.
Yeah.
You get to a point where you have to ask yourself, who benefits from me believing that this is hard?
Yeah.
Because a lot of people,
you
know, and sometimes people just very passively say, like, the thing is hard. And then sometimes there are people who literally don't want you to fully understand how easy it is, because then it makes them less valuable to you.
100. Or you don't need them.
Or you don't need them.
Yeah.
But there are so many times that it's just like, I remember a good mentor of mine got this top position at like with the state, with like the school, mm-hmm. over all the school districts, yeah. in the state. And I remember talking to her, I was like, how did you get that position? Because at the time she was in her 30s, right? We're around the same age. And she's like, Felicia, I just went on the website and it said apply. So I applied. And she's like, I'm thinking people got to nominate you. It got to mm-hmm. be some top mm-hmm. governor, mm-hmm. like all of these things. And she's like, I just applied. Of course, she had all the credentials, right, to be able to get through the process. But she was just like, the application's just on the website.
Crazy.
Like when people come to me, I've done 3 TEDx talks, right? Getting ready to do a TED Global talk I'm excited about. But people will come to me all the time like, Felicia, how do you do a TEDx talk? Like, I was just like, just go to TEDx.com. Everyone that's doing a TEDx in the entire globe lists their event and they have call for speakers. Like, stop thinking that things are hard and stop discounting yourself out of the thing before you even go through the motions.
100%.
And we see that with our application with Black Ambition. Like, I get people like, I'm thinking about, like, why are you thinking about trying?
Yeah, just do it.
Just apply.
Yeah. How long does it take to apply?
It takes a few hours because yeah. you got like, if you don't have all your stuff together, because yeah. you got to put a video together. Mm-hmm. We're asking
you. What's some of the things you need?
We need a video.
Yeah. How long the video?
Like a minute.
Wow. Yeah. 1 minute video. Okay. 1 minute
video.
You need tax returns?
You don't need any of that in the initial like stage.
Yeah, yeah,
you do
yeah.
our due diligence and yeah. our risk assessment yeah. when they get later in the process. But you got to apply as a team.
Yeah.
So we don't accept solo entrepreneurs anymore.
Yeah.
We did the first year.
And it's because you want to make sure somebody's serious, more serious.
We want to make sure they're serious. We want to make sure that like they can concentrate on the program, but like their business still runs as well. And then the other part is like, we're looking for people that can become massive employers.
Yeah.
And so we need you to be thinking about scaling and growth and a team at the very, very beginning. And so when you think about all these numbers that get thrown around about Black women being the highest new entrepreneurs by numbers. Black women are starting businesses bigger and faster than faster than anybody else. But if you really look at the numbers, most of them are solo entrepreneurs. They're not producing any payroll.
Yeah.
That means that it's very hard for them to generate wealth and they are not contributing back into their communities because they're not employers.
Yeah.
And so we're looking for entrepreneurs and companies that are thinking about that in the very beginning. And then at some point, they're going to be a massive employer back into their community yeah. or somewhere in the globe, yeah. right? But that's a priority for us. But like when we even talk about team, I'll get messages like, well, I don't have a co-founder. Did you read the description? Because we're not saying that you have to have a co-founder, but you need a contractor, maybe an employee,
yeah.
an advisor.
Just one person.
You need a team. You need yeah. to be thinking about one other person that's wow. going to even just kind of motivate you along in this journey when you feel
and get like the facts. What does a team entail?
What does a team entail?
You have an advisor.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, if need be, but I'm just saying.
Yeah.
But I sell that to say I even love that idea because you got us thinking about next.
Yeah.
You're not going to stay a solopreneur.
You can't.
Yeah, like.
I mean, so, Sam Alton said
yeah,
can't.
Sam.
But,
yeah.
you know.
And I don't know. Sam, yeah, yeah. But I believe it's going to take time for that and what he's saying on that level. But again, you can stay a solopreneur. But if you're looking to really grow and looking to not be doing everything in the business, you can't be alone.
But right? The other part of that is, one, you know, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready.
Yes.
But we have so many amazing corporate partners that really pour into our entrepreneurs that the thing that you're asking for, you literally can get in 3 months.
Yeah.
And if you're not ready to take advantage of that, that's a problem, right?
Mm.
So, you know, Pharrell is the men's creative director for Louis Vuitton. Louis Vuitton is a funder and a partner of Black Ambition. We took all 35 of our companies that we invested in last year into 2 days into their headquarters.
Fire.
And their distribution and logistics center. Nobody goes yeah. in there. We got to lock the phones, all of that. And
isn't Louis under LVMH or no?
They're under LVMH, yeah.
So you know they running the machine.
Tight ship.
He's the number one wealthiest, well, I believe Bernard Arnault, he's yeah. at least top 3 wealthiest in the world. They run it. That's a system he's running over there.
And so imagine spending 2 days with like the president of their
I mean, what
US.
Is that worth? You can't pay you for
can't
that.
Price on
yeah, it's unpayable.
But you got to be ready for those moments, right? Yeah. We have a entrepreneur right now that has an amazing manufacturing company in Detroit. Pharrell connected her to Tiffany's.
Yeah.
It's like now she's working through her partnership with Tiffany's. You could spend your entire life trying to figure out how to get
that's a phone call
right person.
Yo, let's do a collab. Yo, do a collab with them.
Do a collab. It that's what happens when you get the right type of access.
Yeah.
And I would say that's one of the superpowers of our program is like he literally has opened, for lack of better words, his Rolodex, but his contacts, right, to our entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
I meet with them on a regular basis and like this is what our entrepreneurs need. Who do you know that can get them at least, if not direct person, one step closer to the thing that they need or where they're trying to go?
Whew. Listen, y'all, make sure y'all tap in. Felicia, thank you so much for educating me on even more. Like, I'm always in a constant education mode of getting to the, you informed me and educated me on a lot of things I didn't know today. Let the people know how they could tap in with you and how they could stay connected.
Yeah, blackambitionprize.com is our website. And then I can be found any and everywhere at Felicia Hatcher.
Hey, guys, with that being said, make sure you guys go ahead and apply. And we can't wait to see you guys on the next show. Yeah. Peace.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in this episode. I hope you're getting extreme amount of value. I want you to go ahead and comment below, share with me your biggest takeaway. In addition to that, my number one goal is for me to be able to grow all of my social platforms so I can give you info, insight, strategy, and gain from every platform there is. So take a minute to follow me on Instagram at Neil DeViso, same exact name on Twitter, same exact name on TikTok, and follow me on LinkedIn at Nehemiah Davis. I would love for you to be able to be tuned into my articles and everything that I drop relating to helping you get to that next level in your life. Tune in.